I have always loved these words from Howard Thurman. Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do that. Because what the world needs is more people who have come alive. Thurman was a theologian, a teacher, and a preacher. A black man who was raised in a racially charged time, a time of danger and violence, a time in which his own personhood, his own body, and the bodies of so many people he loved were in danger. He lived in the dawn of the civil rights movement and the awakening consciousness, a time in which so many people were shaking off the slumber of complacency, a time in which the tiniest seeds of justice and righteousness were beginning to be planted in the hearts of some people's minds. And he says, don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive. And what I love about this call is that the deep desire for healing and goodness, the deep desire for justice and peace and balance in this world is not only achieved by strategy and planning, not only by trying to embrace roles and duties, but instead in this world is served, her people are served and set free when we follow the path of aliveness, when we live deep, as Thoreau says in the beginning of the book, as he went to the woods, as he sought to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, to see if he could not learn what it had to teach, and not, when he came to die, discover that he had not lived. He says, I do not wish to live what was not life. Living is so dear. Nor do I wish to practice resignation and lesson is quite necessary. I want to live deep and suck out all of the marrow of life, to put to rout all that is not life, to cut a broad swath and shave close, to drive life into a corner and reduce it to its lowest terms. I love that. Maybe a slightly nicer version of the end of it. Ben and I just got back from some sweet time in the woods. This is my 9-year-old, my eldest son. We had heard of this magical place, Lake Umbegog, of remote campsites that you had to canoe into, and I was sold. We decided with 3 kids now, Lauren in her vast wisdom, so that it would be good to carve out some time, each one-on-one. Lauren is just finishing this trip to California with Jack, heading back tomorrow morning, and while they were gone, we decided that Ben and I would go camping. We borrowed a canoe, lended so sweetly, gathered the necessities, and headed 3 hours north. From where we put the canoe in, impossibly laden with so much gear, firewood, food, water, tent, sleeping bags, supplies, fishing poles, Jack and Lauren headed across the country for an entire week with 2 small rolly bags and 2 small backpacks. And Ben and I headed 3 hours north for 2 nights with an almost entirely full car. Probably as much a testament to the trip leaders as to anything else, but at any rate, we packed the canoe and we headed in, paddling 5 miles, which turns out is a bit of a distance. But once we found it, it was sublime. No other sight within earshot. The whole time we saw just a few people, faraway boaters, a few kayakers. The view from the rocks from which we could swim in the perfectly clear water, impossibly warm water, after so much ocean swimming. The view from the rocks was of lush trees lining our cove and then a vast expanse of the lake. The first morning we woke up to a fog, a mist, which covered the whole lake. We couldn't see 10 feet from the rocks. I wrangled up some early morning warm beverages, coffee for me, some cocoa for Ben. We sat on the rocks, burning our tongues a little, held in this mist, and it was all there. even with so many precious parts of our family so far away, my baby, my beloved, my little boy, it was all there, all I needed. And this, I think, is the second meaning for me in the Thurman. Yes, obviously, it's about purpose. It's about finding joy and finding our true self and nurturing that truth in that self, allowing that self to bless the world. But there on the rocks, in the mist, it also seems that it's about presence. It's about being alive in the fullness of whatever comes. Sublime moments like that of peace and connection, and the frustrated moments of discouragement and disbelief in the affairs of the world, and even more so in the thousand bland, boring moments in between. Because we are always connected. We are always held. No matter how far we feel we have fallen, no matter how bad it may seem, no matter how irreparable the damage we have done, we are always held. Howard Thurman wrote a lot and spoke a lot about his favorite psalm, Psalm 139. It goes like this. You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all of my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before me. You lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there, your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. For me, this speaks to this connection, to this fact so deep to the core of my own being, that I am part and particle, that I'm one with all that is. For Thurman, who is a mystic and a Christian, and for him, this is the omnipresence of his God. For me, this God is not a man, not a father watching my every move, but a totality, a oneness, a reality for which even the word God is slightly too limiting, a oneness which is with me, holding me always. This is the beauty, the powerful beauty with which I connect in those moments of clarity and truth. Holding my babies when they were tiny, little warm loaves of bread, asleep on my chest, all potential, all beauty, all goodness. This is the truth I know when I hold the hand of Henry and Jean Altenberg this week earlier in the hospital, fresh out of the woods, not knowing how many times I would hold those hands again. Henry's so clear about the fleeting nature of his life, and we had a conversation, and we prayed, and just before I left, in this beautiful moment, Jean said, "Your boys might like this. What did one cannibal say to another while they were eating the comedian?" I swear she said this. "Does this taste funny to you?" And that's what it is. It's the fullness, all of it. We are connected in beauty, connected in joy, but we forget, we get distracted, and we get fearful, we get discouraged and despondent, and for good reason. This has been a hard time that we are moving through together, so much. Just so much violence, from the violence to the politics, to the violent politics, just so much. Howard Thurman speaks to this too. These are his words, a meditation, a poem called Life Goes On. He writes, "During these turbulent times, we must remind ourselves repeatedly that life goes on. This we are apt to forget. The wisdom of life transcends our wisdoms. The purpose of life outlasts our purposes. The process of life cushions our processes. The mass attack of disillusion and despair, distilled out of the collapse of hope, has so invaded our thoughts that what we know to be true and valid seems unreal and ephemeral. There seems to be little energy left for aught but futility. This is the great deception. By it, whole peoples have gone down into oblivion without the will to affirm the great and permanent strength of the clean and commonplace. He writes, "Let us not be deceived. It is just as important as ever to attend to the little graces by which the dignity of our lives is maintained and sustained. Birds still sing. The stars continue to cast their gentle gleam over the desolation of the battlefields, and the heart is still inspired by the kind word and the gracious deed. There is no need to fear evil. There is every need to understand what it does, how it operates in the world, what it draws upon to sustain itself. We must not shrink from the knowledge of the evilness of evil. Over and over, we must know that the real target of evil is not the destruction of the body, not the reduction of rubble of cities. The real target of evil is to corrupt the spirit and to give the soul the contagion of interdisintegration. When this happens, there is nothing left. We are captured and laid waste. Therefore, the evil in the world around us must not be allowed to move from without to within." He says, "Drink in the beauty that is within reach. Clothe one's life with the simple deeds of kindness. Keep alive the sensitivities to the movement of the Spirit of God in the quietness of the human heart and in the workings of the human mind. This is always the ultimate answer to the great deception." This is the answer. In these trying times, to come alive, to know who we are and what we are here for, to not be daunted or distracted, but to know in the bones of our bones that the stakes are so very high, and that especially now our very best is needed. Drink in the beauty that is within reach. Clothe yourselves in simple deeds of kindness. Come alive. Amen.